That is some of a work called Schism for Chamber Orchestra by David Biedenbender, who was conducting an ensemble of musicians at the University of Michigan. And that piece was one that was on Sunday night's concert as part of the Red Note New Music Festival at Illinois State University in Normal. It was the opening concert of that festival, which continues through Thursday. And that performance on that occasion, given by the Illinois State University Chamber Orchestra, conducted by Glenn Block. I'm Kevin Kelly. This is Live and Local. The show's your connection to local performances. And it's the Red Note New Music Festival that we'll be talking about on today's program. Coming up, I will talk with a fellow named Paul Frucht, who is one of the young composers whose music will be played on tonight's concert. We'll be hearing more about that later from, well, actually very shortly for that matter, from Carl Schimmel, who is co-director of the festival. And he is also on faculty, of course, at ISU and a composer himself with the music that was played on Sunday night's concert as well. Carl, thanks for joining us. Welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me, Kevin.
And I'll ask for this the same question I probably started with each of the last 2 years, and I frankly forget the answer, and that's, where does the Red Note come in as part of the name of the festival?
Oh, sure. So that's a name we came up with a few years ago. We figured the New Music Festival should have a special name, and the red part of it just refers to our school color, and of course the red birds are our mascot. But the note, of course, being a musical note, red notes, the term red note pertains actually to early music. Some notes were notated in red to indicate a particular rhythmic value, I believe. But we use it just to indicate that it's maybe local and also exciting or vibrant, like the color red.
Is there any notion at all that using an early music term like Red Note in connection to new music, that there is any notion of continuity?
That's an interesting question. So no one's brought that up before, although to my knowledge, but it's true that there is a tradition of composers who draw more heavily from early music than from, say, standard repertoire, standard, you know, the orchestral tradition, say, or the chamber ensemble tradition. So there are some composers who have that kind of affinity with early music. I don't know that there are very many represented this year on our concert programs, but that's an interesting thought, yes.
What's the overall, is there an overall theme this year?
There's no overall theme this year, although the main kind of interesting special thing that we're doing this year as opposed to the previous years is that we have a student workshop, and that began on Sunday and is continuing through the evening tonight. And for the workshop, we have a guest composer, Lee Hyla, who's a distinguished composer who teaches at Northwestern University. And we have 8 graduate students from around the country and around the world on campus with us here, getting their pieces, brand new pieces, rehearsed and performed by our guest Ensemble Del Niente, also from Chicago.
Well, let's talk about Ensemble Del Niente. They actually played last night with music that included some by Lee Hyla. And then tonight, as you said, is going to be all these new pieces by young composers. Right. Who are these folks, and what does Del Niente mean?
Del Niente means from nothing, and it's a reference to a work that was a relatively recent work by Helmut Lachenmann, who's a German composer. But you'll find actually in many contemporary works, my own included, that composers will sometimes want sounds to emerge from nothing, right? So as opposed to begin the sound at pianissimo, in other words, begin it quietly and get louder, there is now a notation in place that is frequently used by composers to indicate emerging from nothingness. So that's what the name comes from. As far as the ensemble, it's a flexible mixed chamber ensemble, and by mixed I mean various instruments together. The people who are members of the ensemble are there are a large number of them, but they, you know, depending on the forces required, can have just a few playing a piece, or they could have a larger number. So for this residency here at ISU, it's a group of six performers and a conductor, and they're all fantastic musicians and really experts at performing the music of our time.
And that is their specialty?
Right, yeah. And in particular, I think they would agree that they have a special interest in playing music that kind of pushes the envelope in a way, you know, so music that might be considered avant-garde. They play a lot of European music. That there's a kind of stronger tradition of that in Europe, at least one aspect of that tradition is maybe more strongly rooted in Europe. Lachenmann being maybe a great example of that.
There's another group that is also among your guests called the Concordance Ensemble, a much smaller group, just a trio, and we'll be talking with one of their members, I think, on tomorrow's show. They're involved in Wednesday night's concert. Tell me about them and a little bit about that concert as well.
Sure. So Concordance Ensemble is a group that's based in Dubuque, Iowa. The members of that ensemble are Jim Sherry, he plays trumpet, Banglong Do is a pianist, and Wesley Luke, the violinist. And they're going to also be performing with Patricia Moorhead, who is from Chicago, and she's an oboist and composer. Her husband, the conductor Philip Moorhead, will also be present to conduct a few of the pieces on the program. One of the nice things about the series of programs we have this week, you know, this year, is the very different types of new music an audience member would be able to hear. So last night's performance, for example, had a lot of, as I said, somewhat maybe more avant-garde music, or music which would be perhaps a little bit adventurous, you know, music that might be challenging for some listeners' ears. And I think that the pieces that will be on the program tomorrow night are more strongly tied to a kind of more conservative tradition of chamber music writing. The music that will be on their program on Wednesday night includes some pieces by composers such as David Gillingham and Eric Owazin and James Stevenson, all of whom are well known for their writing for brass in particular and band music. And some of your listeners may have heard their works performed before. Mixed in are a few premieres, including one by local composer David Veo, who teaches at Illinois Wesleyan. So that will be that program in and of itself is quite varied, I would say. But you know, to compare tomorrow night's concert with last night's concert, which is mostly European, presents, I think, for the audience quite a different experience and gives them a sense of, hopefully, the very wide-ranging world of contemporary composition.
And here is one of the pieces that will be on tomorrow night's concert with the Concordance Ensemble and special guests, Patricia Moorhead, oboe, and also Philip Moorhead conducting some of the pieces. This one, I'm sure, will have no conductor. It's a first movement of a trio sonata by James Stevenson, written in 2001 for violin, trumpet, and piano. Thank you. Trumpet player Richard Stozel, pianist Ksenia Laletnica, and violinist Eric Tanner in the opening movement of the trio sonata for those instruments by James Stevenson. That music will open the concert tomorrow night on the Red Note New Music Festival at Illinois State University. That concert starts at 8, as they all do this week, at Kemp Recital Hall on the ISU campus in Normal. The Red Note New Music Festival going through Thursday. This is Live and Local. I'm Kevin Kelly. Our broadcast is made possible with support from the Sousa Archives and Center for American Music, breathing life into the history of our nation's musical past through exhibits, guided tours, and performances at the University of Illinois. More information is available, and visits can be scheduled at 217-333-4577. And my guest this portion of the show is co-director of the festival, Carl Schimmel. You referred to the folks playing whose music is on tomorrow night as perhaps generally from a little more conservative tradition. Do you think that there has been a trend in the last number of years for younger composers, and younger is a really relative term, to write music that perhaps is more conservative, which you can translate if you like, as, and I actually mean it this way, as being perhaps a little more listener-friendly?
It's hard to say. There's interest in, I think it's maybe more fair to generalize that there is interest in all aspects of the of musical creation right now. I mean, there's all types of music out there, depending on where you live, your local ensembles may be more inclined to play one style of music rather than another. But you know, now with the internet, anyone who has access to the internet is able to explore everything from, you know, premieres of compositions this year that are in C major to premieres of compositions this year which are using extended techniques that have never been used before, you know. In other words, making music which is more like sound sculpture, or music that cannot be sung, you know, like as in a tune. But I think that there's interest in all aspects of all styles right now, and I think it also depends on who you ask as far as the trend. The trend question would be answered very differently from person to person, and I can say for sure that if you ask that question of a European, their answer would be very different as well, because they have their own trends in Europe, and even in Canada, you know, our neighbors to the north don't know as much about what's going on in America, and we don't know as much about what's going on in Canada, and that's too bad, but hopefully now that we're all so interconnected, you know, through the internet, that will change.
There's one more recital on Thursday night, and I should remind listeners that I'm talking with Carl Schimmel, who is co-director of this year's Red Note New Music Festival, which is happening right now at Illinois State University, and drawing people from I guess, all over the country, really.
Right, yeah. Especially for this, the workshop concert that is tonight. The concerts, by the way, this week are all, the remaining concerts are all at 8 p.m. in Kemp Recital Hall on the ISU campus. And there's a parking garage that's free. All the events are free. And there are also a few composer presentations happening on Thursday. I'll speak a little more about that in a minute, but I did want to mention, just to give you a sense of the kind of diversity that we have on tonight's program. Tonight is the graduate student concert. These students are very accomplished and come from all over the world. We have students from Brazil, from Korea, from Italy, from Japan, and all over America as well. So I encourage everybody to come and get a sense of what's going on throughout the world and throughout America. They really have present a nice stylistic, a diverse, you know, group of styles with this concert. As far as the presentations, there are a couple of presentations being given by composers. Those will be at 2 p.m. and 3 p.m. At ISU, and that will be on Thursday afternoon. At 2 p.m., Lansing McCloskey, who is a composer based in Miami, will be presenting on his music. He won the chamber ensemble category of the composition competition this year. And then at 3 p.m., Patricia Moorhead, who is the oboist and composer from Chicago, will present on her music and probably talk a little about the music scene in Chicago. So that should be interesting. And that's in the Centennial East Building, room 229.
I should ask how the graduate students whose music is being played tonight, did they get selected to perform, to have their music played at this event?
Yeah, they did. So it was free to apply, and we had about 100 submissions from student composers around the world. And we, on the composition faculty at Illinois State, narrowed it down to about 15 or so. And then our guest composer, Lee Hyla, made the final selection of the final eight. And all of the final eight who were selected chose to attend. So
that's wonderful. So just a bit about Thursday's recital. I think we'll be talking with at least one of those composers. You mentioned him, Lansing McCloskey, sometime over the next couple of days. But that is billed here as involving ISU faculty and students.
Right. Yeah, so we like to have at least one concert which showcases the abilities of our faculty and students. This year we have maybe more students participating than in years past. In years past, we've tried to have as many faculty as we could participate, but we thought maybe it'd be nice to include more of our students in the process as well. So there is one piece which will be performed almost entirely by students, graduate students mostly. And then on the flip side, there's Lansing McCloskey's piece, which won the competition, will be performed that evening by mostly faculty, but we do have a talented undergraduate saxophone player who's going to be playing with them, and he has actually an extended solo, so he'll be sort of featured for that piece.
There's one composer, and I'm have to say I'm a little bit out of touch with the names of some contemporary composers, but I do recognize the name of one of them, John Luther Adams, not to be confused with the composer John Adams.
Right.
And I suppose they write very different music. But where do these folks come from? Are the composers represented on Thursday's recital? The professionals, I guess we can say, from across the country as well?
Yes. There's a few ways that we put together the programs for concerts such as this one with the faculty and students. One is, of course, to solicit ideas from faculty. And then, of course, we have some talented composers here on our own faculty. So on that particular concert, there will be pieces by Martha Horst and Yao Chen. Martha's piece will be a premiere. Chen's piece is one that he wrote when he was still a student, but he revised it slightly, and it's going to be premiered, not premiered, but I believe the revision will get its premiere on that concert. And then we have several pieces which were suggested to us by faculty members. So, and those are vocal works, the Songs of Hadrian by John David Ernest, who's a New York composer, and he is going to be on campus for that event. And then a set of short choral works based on quotes from The Simpsons. So that's kind of an interesting idea.
Whose piece is that one?
His name is Paul Crabtree. I don't believe he will be in attendance, but that was written in 2002, so not too long ago. And then the final work that I believe has not yet been mentioned is a fascinating work called Straight Jacket. It's almost a theatrical piece that you really have to kind of watch rather than simply to hear it. It's by Mark Applebaum, who's a composer on the faculty at Stanford University, and he specializes in music, which is, to use a term I've already used, avant-garde in that it's using gestures. There's often activity that the performers have to do that create what many would consider to be noise as a way to create a structure which is musical. It's kind of an interesting approach.
Yeah, and coming back to that Simpsons piece, I'm enjoying just the title, Five Romantic Miniatures on The Simpsons. That's good. I wonder if that's a first.
Yeah, probably. I don't know if The Simpsons have inspired very many musical compositions yet, but I know a lot of composers who enjoy The Simpsons, so on the other hand, it wouldn't surprise me if there are a few other pieces.
Well, as you said, there's a lot of variety, both of sound world of that the composers represent, as well as of technique and of just sort of general approach to music making. And you had a piece that was premiered on Sunday, and I noted that it was played twice.
Yeah, the orchestra, and specifically our music director, director of orchestras, likes to do that with premieres. So he feels it's important that an audience get to hear the piece more than once, because no one in the audience has ever heard it before. So it's an opportunity to kind of have a general sense of the piece the first time around, and then have maybe a much better sense of what's going on the second time around. And it's an interesting idea, and I think it's, if there's time for it on a program, it's worth doing. Usually what I've heard from people afterwards is that they appreciated the chance to hear it a second time.
Because a lot of new music can cause some confusion if you're not used to how, using the term sound world of a particular composer. Your piece called Two Variations on Ascent into the Empyrean.
Yeah, it was inspired by some artwork that my kids drew, both of which had to do with the sky. And so the Empyrean is the heavens, right?
And the movement titles, I guess, reflect those paintings or those drawings, Rainbow for Mama with Door and Rocket Ship.
Yeah, yep. So the first one is a little bit more ethereal, and the second has a lot of energy and noise.
Explosive.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that was played Sunday. Glenn Block conducting the ISU Symphony Orchestra. Well, thanks, Carl, for the really quick overview of the Red Note New Music Festival. It's happening now at Illinois State University in Normal. with recitals remaining tonight, tomorrow, and Thursday at 8 o'clock, all of them for free and all of them in the Kemp Recital Hall. And is there a place online that somebody can look at the really quite extensive and remarkably well-done program that I've had a chance to look at myself?
Sure. So it's probably easiest just to do a search for Red Note. If you just do a search for Red Note, it will come up in that first page of results, I'm sure. But the exact website is fineArts.IllinoisState.edu/RedNote.
Okay. Carl Schimmel is a professor of theory and composition at Illinois State University, and of course a composer himself and co-director of the festival, along with Yao Chen, right?
That's right, yep.
Who's will have a piece on Thursday night's program. Thanks very much for joining us on the show, and best of luck with the continuation of the festival.
Thank you, Kevin.
And our program today is made possible with support from Krannert Art Museum, presenting the 22nd Annual Petals and Paintings Museum Fundraising Gala, Silent Auction, and Exhibition, featuring floral displays by artists throughout the Midwest, inspired by Krannert Art Museum's permanent collection. The public exhibition runs this Saturday and Sunday. My next guest is one of the composers who will have music played on tonight's concert at 8 o'clock, that is to say, the one with all of the graduate students from across the country who were part of the composition workshop. His name is Paul Frucht, and here is a portion of his orchestral work called Relic, played by the Juilliard Orchestra, conducted by Jeffrey Milarski. My next guest is named Paul Frucht. He is one of the composers who will be represented on the concert we referred to earlier tonight at Illinois State, part of the Red Note New Music Festival. It's premieres by participants in the Red Note New Music Festival Composition Workshop. And in fact, his piece called The Visitor is last on that program. He's currently a doctoral fellow at the Juilliard School in New York City. He's my guest right now. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thank you. I'm really happy to be on the show.
So the piece we played to lead in is an orchestral piece called Relic. Actually, the way I saw it listed has all capital letters, R-E-L-I-C. Is that strategic or was that accidental?
Well, I actually thought about, I had it in all capital letters, and then I had some really good advice that told me to change it to just regular first letter capital and
the rest lowercase. Okay, so that happened after it went up on the page I saw.
Yeah, that happened after it went up. I should probably change that.
So tell me a little bit about that piece, you know, the concept behind it.
So the concept behind it, I wrote that piece. I started it at the end of my first year at Juilliard and worked on it for the next 8 months. At that time, I was studying a lot of 19th century music because I was catching up on my fundamentals in the first year, which is something you normally do. So I was looking at a lot of Beethoven and Brahms and Schumann and just trying to study those scores and glean what I could from those composers because those are icons, and I really love and respect their work. So I was looking at their music and a lot of the harmonic language they were using, I won't get into too much musical detail, but a lot of the harmonic language they were using, people think of today as very 19th century, and it is. But I wanted to take something called a triad, which is part of basically the brick of 19th century harmonic language, and take it and basically write a piece about it and deconstruct it and use it in as many ways as possible, linearly, vertically, motivically, and harmonically, and try to do as many things as I could with it. A lot of musicians see the triad as a relic of harmony, and that's where the title comes from.
And relic, although it depends who's using it anymore. It seems that, well, we're going to hear at least one other example of your work coming up, but I've had a chance to sample a number of pieces and found them all in some way or another to be variously beautiful, exciting, in any event, enjoyable in a way that I have to say some newer music I haven't found to be. And I wonder if there is a particular sort of philosophy you have behind your music generally.
There is. It's evolved over the last few years, increasingly. But right now, what I'm trying to do is I don't like to be kind of influenced by any arbitrary method of composition. I sit at the piano and I hear things that I like and I find things that I like that I personally find appealing musically, emotionally, and then I try to create interesting music out of them, out of those ideas, and they evolve how I think they need to evolve throughout the piece. And I'm just trying to do in each piece what I think needs to happen at each moment in each piece, rather than be guided by any kind of philosophy that is overbearing in any kind of way. I don't have any things that I would ever rule out doing, and I don't have anything that I hold myself to doing. It's just kind of what I feel like doing, what I feel like the piece needs in any given time.
What sort of guidance, as philosophically anyway, have you gotten since you've been at Juilliard? You actually got your master's there, and as I said earlier, now a doctoral fellow.
Yeah, I've gotten more guidance than I possibly could have imagined. My teacher, Robert Beezer, is an amazing composer and one of the most thoughtful people and musicians I've ever met. And as you can imagine, that would make him a fantastic teacher, and he is. And he's kind of instilled the philosophy in me of don't be bound by anything and don't hold yourself to anything. It's really about what the piece needs. If the piece needs something really, really simple and beautiful, then that's what needs to happen. And if the piece needs something that's very harsh and kind of rough around the edges, then that's what needs to happen there. So he's the one who really kind of instilled that philosophy in me. And another person who was key in my development was a composer named Justin Dello Joyo, who was my first teacher at NYU. And even though that your question referred to my experience at Juilliard, he actually was also really important in my development. And he encouraged that philosophy too. Always have a reason for what you're doing in your music. Don't be bound by anything. And he's a wonderful composer and teacher as well. And finally, I think the third person who in my compositional development since starting at Juilliard was really important is a composer named Philip Lasser, who has some very interesting theories on harmony that really I took to heart and kind of informed my harmonic language.
I'm looking at the titles of a number of your pieces, including Arrow in the Sand, Echo in Rogers Park, Relic, of course, we heard, and a piece that's on tonight's program called The Visitor, and they all sort of imply either an idea or perhaps something, if not programmatic, at least extra musical in suggestion. Does that tend to be true?
Another compositional philosophy of mine is I'm trying to write music that is not just important to me and in my life, but important to other people. I'm trying to be as inclusive as I can in my music, and I'm trying to write about things that are current. When I wrote Dawn, that was about something that had just happened. Echo in Rogers Park is about Charles Ives. I'm from Danbury, which is also where Charles Ives is from. And, you know, that's something that's important to me. The Visitor is about some weird aspect of my childhood. So I'm trying to write about things that I have a personal connection to, because I think that when I have a personal connection to what I'm writing about, then it just makes the music better. And for me, I feel like if I don't have a personal connection to what I'm writing, and if I can't really feel it, there's no way I can expect anyone else to.
You mentioned the piece Dawn, and I know you had told me this was a little bit of an older piece of yours, and since you're not very old at all, that's, I guess, saying something. But you said you write for people to a certain extent, as well as for a purpose and with certain inspiration, and this one had an inspiration that all of our listeners will know about. You want to talk about that briefly?
Yes, I do. I'm happy to speak about it on this program. It's something that is really important to me. I think it's probably the most important piece I've ever written. So Dawn Hochsprung was the principal of Sandy Hook Elementary School and was killed in the shooting there in December of 2012. And I grew up in the town next to Sandy Hook, Danbury, as I mentioned, and where she was my assistant principal at my middle school and also the advisor for the National Junior Honor Society when I was part of it. So I had a lot of interaction with her. I also knew her husband, who taught at that same middle school that I went to, Rogers Park. When she was killed in that tragedy, I really wanted to do something, just something to express, you know, what the community was feeling, and just do something nice musically. And the piece just kind of appeared. I started it about a week and a half after the shooting, and then took a break and finished it a couple months later. And I wrote all of it in Connecticut, which I think was a really important thing, rather than New York. It's a little bit of a different piece. It's actually not that old. It's about a year and a half old, I guess. It's less than a year and a half. It's a bit of a different piece because in that piece, I actually did hold myself to something where I was just going to create something very straightforward and beautiful, but but that still sounded like it belonged to the time that it belongs to, 2012, 2013, but also was straightforward and something that the family could be easily access, and they came to the second performance of it, and also something that the community could easily access, because I wanted it to be, I wanted it to be something for everyone, not just some, it, not just a piece that I wrote, if that makes any sense.
Sure, and I think you succeeded, certainly, in writing something very beautiful. Here is some of it, anyway. It's called Dawn, by my guest here on Live and Local, Paul Frucht, whose piece called The Visitor is going to be, will close tonight's concert at the Red Note New Music Festival at the Illinois State University in Normal. That concert is at 8, and more about that coming up on Live and Local. Music by Paul Frucht. It's called Dawn, and as inspired by the events at Sandy Hook Elementary School in, of a couple years ago in Connecticut. He's my guest here, as his piece will be one of 8 performed tonight, world premieres at the Red Note New Music Festival at Illinois State University. And you mentioned, Paul, this piece called The Visitor, which is for flute, clarinet, violin, cello, and piano. So a not unconventional group of instruments, that it had a peculiar genesis in some incident in your life? Is that something
yeah.
you care to talk about?
Sure. As I'm sure you've gleaned from me so far, that some of my music has a very, very serious programmatic element. And I did that for basically everything I wrote in 2013 had a very, very serious programmatic element. And it's not that The Visitor isn't a serious piece. It's that I maybe wanted to do something with a program that was a little bit lighter or just a little bit more fun. And when I was younger, I grew up, well, I was born in Manhattan and lived there until I was almost seven. And when my family and I moved to Connecticut, I couldn't deal with the silence. I was so used to hearing cars and people and car horns on the street all night long. And I couldn't deal with the silence. I could not sleep. And I guess I was afraid of the dark, even though I had a nightlight. But I always had this weird fear that ghosts were going to come visit me and that there were constantly spirits moving around our house. I was a bit of a weird child, but I decided to write a piece based on this, what an encounter with one of those spirits might have been like. And that's why the piece is called The Visitor. I didn't want to call it anything having to do with the spirit because that has a different connotation that the piece really isn't about. It's just about a very odd visitor. And that's why I titled it that.
Yeah. Fair enough. And does that mean it's a ghostly piece, or is that really hard to say?
I actually hadn't thought of it as ghostly, but now that you say it, there are certain aspects of it that are ghostly and ethereal and kind of very soft and kind of in a shadow. So yeah, I would say that parts of it are certainly ghostly, but parts of it are also really, really aggressive and frantic.
That's going to be tonight at 8 o'clock at Kemp Recital Hall on East Campus of Illinois State University in Normal. The final piece on the program of new works, brand new works, with others by the other seven composers coming out of their composition workshop. And I thought we'd close with a piece of chamber music of yours, since that is, I should say, another piece of chamber music of yours. And that is one you mentioned earlier, Echo in Rogers Park. You also mentioned Rogers Park, which is not the one in Chicago, by the way, where I lived for a long time. Different place.
No, it's the one in Connecticut. I did mention Rogers Park because that is where I did go to middle school and has to do with Dawn. But also, the funny thing is I started writing Echo in Rogers Park before the events of Sandy Hook Elementary, and that kind of interrupted this piece. But Echo in Rogers Park was started in November of 2012, every time in music school, every time you say you're from Danbury, Connecticut, everyone always asks you about Ives. And living up to Ives as the other hometown composer from my area, it's not that I seriously think about it a lot, but it's definitely crossed my mind. So I decided what I would do is write a piece that uses one of Charles Ives' songs, and I deconstructed it and fused it with my own material and brought it back and quoted it in the second movement. And Charles Ives was famous for quoting pieces and quoting folk tunes, and I just thought it would be an interesting thing to do and an interesting way to write a piece and kind of pay homage to my hometown composer.
Charles Ives represented in this movement. It's called The Field from Echo in Rogers Park by Paul Frucht. And this is for violin and piano. Who are the performers here? Do you recall?
The violinist is Julia Choi, a wonderful violinist and my good friend that I go to school with in New York. And the pianist is Ben Lowdy, another really, really good friend of mine who I also go to school with and also is in the doctoral program in New York. Julia's in the master's program. And I couldn't ask for better musicians. They're both amazing players and amazing friends.
Thank you very much for joining us on Live and Local and letting us explore a little bit of your music.
Of course. It's been a pleasure. Thank you so much. Thank you.
That's the first part of the first movement of Echo in Rogers Park by Paul Frucht. That movement called The Field. The second one is called Song from Another Time. Here on Live and Local on FM 90.9, thanks very much for joining us on the show today. And we'll have another conversation or two having to do with the Red Note New Music Festival on tomorrow's show. You're listening to 90.9 WYLL-FM and HD Urbana with translator W293 AF Danville, NPR Classical Music and More for Central Illinois. WYLL is a member-supported service of the College of Media at Illinois. We're currently at 53 degrees, coming up on 5 o'clock. All Things Considered is next.